Ellen, thank you very much indeed for joining us this evening. You're down in Chichester. You're one of the ministers at Chichester Baptist Church. Would you just tell us very briefly about Chichester Baptist Church? Just tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, no problem. Really good to be with you. It's always stimulating, isn't it? Kind of sharing stories. And I always think one story sparks another story. So hopefully our story will spark yours. But equally, it's just lovely for me to connect and hear a little bit about your story as well. I've been here in Chichester for nearly 9 years now. I was at a church in Morden, southwest London, for 8 years before that, as a minister there on the team. And I moved here 9 years ago. I'm married to Kevin. We've got two boys who are now 11 and 13. So they've had most of their growing up years here in Chichester. And I joined a thriving church with a really positive team that's kind of grown and developed in the last 9 years too. First places to live in lockdown. I imagine you might feel that as well, but it's beautiful here. And there's an interesting culture here. There's a real heart to serve in the church. The church is right on one of the estates in Chichester. So it's got a lot of connections and we've got a lot of goodwill towards us, which really helps in terms of our mission, because the church has already been used a huge amount for community events. There's a lot of respect and goodwill between us and, for example, the local residents association and community groups around. The building is used by so many in the community. So in terms of our mission, it really helps that we've got a good kind of standing in the community, which has helped us. I guess we're a largish church, as Baptist churches go, part of the Baptist Union. There are two of us ministers, or there were, my colleague Ken Benjamin and myself. He's just recently, in the last week, moved on. And the church appointed me 9 years ago, partly as just another minister on the team as the church was growing, but also because of a journey that the church had been on in that time, thinking about mission and what it might mean to mobilise the church more creatively in mission. So part of my appointment was general church oversight and leadership and preaching and so on, but also to help with church on this particular journey that I'd had a bit of experience of in my previous church, of missional communities. We call them alternative gatherings, but missional communities, as they're often known. So yeah, that's a bit about the church and about how I came to be there.
Great. Well, let's tell us about these alternative gatherings, because at Seer Green, we're a small church, a rural village church, and we've probably got, well, I think we've got about 47 members, and we've just been on perhaps a two-year journey where we've been thinking about how we might do mission more appropriately today and more fruitfully, we hope. We've been a classic where we've been doing incredible work. We're really engaged with the community, with lots of families. We do things like toddlers and a coffee shop for some of the older folks. And we're really, really engaged at the heart of our little village community. But we weren't seeing much fruit in terms of people coming to faith and so on. And so we've been on a couple of years journey where we've been asking the question, what might culturally appropriate mission look like in the various sectors of our community? And last year we established what we call the graft. It came out of a prophetic word given to the church about something new being established in the church, but not a church plant which was somewhere over there and somehow disassociated with the church, but something that was very much at the heart of the church and part of the church, but something new nevertheless. I suppose when you talk about alternative gatherings, that's very much what we have in mind for the graft. And very recently as a church, we've adopted our vision for the next phase in the life of the church, which is actually to be, although we're a small church, to become a church of small groups, of small missional communities. So we're very interested in your alternate gatherings. So if I can just ask you some questions about that, you introduced these small communities or alternative gatherings about 3 years ago, was it?
Well, a bit longer ago than that, actually. Okay. But it's been an organic journey. Would it help to share a little bit about how we got going?
It would be very interesting. Yeah, I think we would, you know, if Chichester Baptist Church was already then a large thriving church, why did you feel the need to do something different? Mm. So yeah, tell us about the journey.
We were asking very similar questions to you, really. And I'm just really encouraged at what you're doing, because I think the brilliant thing about any sort of missional community is it doesn't matter about the size of the church, the need is the same and the potential is the same. So it's not a model or a program that fits a particular size of church, and you can kind of make it what you want in terms of, you know, the community and the culture that you're in. But we were asking very similar questions. We were asking ourselves, you know, we are, by some people's standards, you know, a kind of successful church. We were large and growing, but we weren't seeing the kind of fruit that we wanted to see, or the people come to faith that we wanted to see, considering the size of church we were. So there was transfer growth, and then of course there were genuine salvations, and we were seeing people baptized and become Christians, of course we were, but just not in the numbers that we would hope. And I guess we just started to have an honest conversation with that about the church. You know, what success is, only the Lord knows. But people could look at our church and think we were successful just because we had loads of bums on seats on a Sunday. And there was a kind of growing dissatisfaction about the numbers of people finding faith through our church community. And we started to have a conversation with the church that really said, we need to be honest that the culture has changed. And churches are not the answer for an increasing number of people. So however brilliant our services might be, however many of them we might decide to have, however, you know, we could multiply, we were running out of space, we could multiply our services, they are not the answer for 95% of the people of Chichester. And our culture is such that people don't any longer want to come to a church service or to a church building, usually, to explore faith. Now, that doesn't mean that people aren't spiritual, doesn't mean that people don't have questions, they absolutely do, but no longer do they come to Christians or to churches to find the answer. Did we need to think more creatively and in a braver way about what we could do for the sake of those who weren't ever going to come? We were well resourced. We had lots of people, and God had blessed us. And was he calling us to some bolder experiments, some experimental things for the sake of the lost, the last, the little and the least? So we started talking about that with the church. We did a teaching series, I remember it, called Entering Uncharted Waters, where we just talked about, you know, the New Testament church. They didn't really know what they were doing or where they were going, but they tried stuff and see what God was blessing. And we started to talk about the idea of missional communities, which was trying to transition the church away from being a very consumer mentality or a very attractional kind of church. We did loads of good evangelism, but it was all kind of come to us evangelism. It was all come to us, come to our events, come to Alpha, come to our building, come to what we're putting on. And actually, perhaps God was calling us, and he says, come to me, but then he says, go. And perhaps he was calling us to go and be where people were and to be good news in the community rather than expecting people to come to us. And so we started to sow the idea of missional communities in people's minds. And we had some principles that were really important to us early on. We felt that we wanted anything we did to be lightweight. So what we didn't want to do is add to people's schedules another onerous thing in their lives when they're already busy with work and the home group and church on Sundays, you know, adding another event that was a big deal. We wanted whatever we did to be lightweight. So kind of a catchphrase of high accountability, low control, you know, we'd give people lots of freedom, but also that we really wanted it all to be very organic. So rather than coming up with a great plan and saying to people, we've got all these ideas of what we could do in terms of reaching our community, who wants to run it? Instead, we said, is there a particular people group or need or hobby that you could get excited about, that you could build a little community around and enable people to explore faith in one of those areas and run with it? So it was a bit risky because people said, you can just imagine the kind of random stuff that people came back to us with. But we were kind of anything goes. And as long as there was enough traction and enough people involved to get something going, so it had to have a little steering team. And it had to have a mission statement so that it wasn't just a kind of club or an interest group. We were willing to give things a go. And we didn't want to do a big launch where we set up lots of these missional communities. We just thought we would just put the word out there. And when we got some to start, we would just start. So we started seven years ago with just one and then two. And then gradually over the last 8 years, we've added to those missional communities, and some have come and some have gone, depending on the life of them in that time. And we've added to them. They are all community sized. They all have a mission statement, they with a missional intention behind them, and they all have a couple of leaders that are kind of confirmed and endorsed by the church. All of them are kind of brought before the church and commissioned and prayed for and sent out. But the biggest thing of all for us, and I'm not saying this is right for every church, but the biggest thing of all for us is that we decided really early on that we were going to recycle Sundays and use Sundays. And if I'm honest with you, I think this for us has been the key to the fruit that we've seen. So rather than asking people to add in a mission activity along with everything else, which if we're being really honest, is just not going to happen for most of our people. It just isn't. To say, could you come on a Sunday? Could you work hard? Could you be a part of a home group? And could you every other Wednesday do a mission activity as well? For us, actually, we have two services on a Sunday. We have 8 opportunities to come and have teaching and fellowship. Could we use one of those a month, just one a month, at a time that we've already given the time to serve God out in the community in some way? So all of our missional communities happen on a Sunday morning. They all happen about the same time, so that if people in families are involved in more than one, they're in different ones, but it's at the same time. And they're all on different Sundays. So on any given Sunday, we're standing at the front of our church pre-lockdown and saying, welcome to CBC. We are gathered here, but two or three of our alternative gatherings are also out today. So on any given Sunday, there'll be two or three of our alternative gatherings out and about in the community. So we have 9 over the course of the month and on different Sundays. We said a lot of times very early on, we are, in any Christian individual's life, as an individual, but also as a church community, we need a balance of up in and out. Up to God, worship, adoration, teaching, in fellowship to each other and time together, and out in mission. And that's a kind of given. That's Jesus' model. So for us as an individual, but also us in terms of church community. But if we're really, really honest, most churches are really good at the up and the in, and they're really not that great at the out. And it's not a isosceles. Is that the triangle? Where is equal? Idea. Anyway, it's not balanced. Our triangles aren't balanced normally. We don't have the right balance of up in and out. So what we talked to our church about was tipping the triangle on its head and actually allowing mission to lead us. And by using our Sundays, it was kind of giving our church a very clear message that this was a priority for us. This is a bit like your 2020 vision. This is the thing that's really important to us. Let's let mission lead us. And then the up in and the out will follow. So we talked about that a lot in the early days, and we still do from time to time, that what we're doing with our missional communities is not neglecting the up and the in, all the people that are a bit worried, what about the teaching? What about the fellowship? What about if people drift off or, only want to go to alternative gatherings and never to church? But actually, if we let the out lead us, then the up and the in always follow.
Talk us through them. What are they? It would be very interesting to know. So you've got 9 going on at the moment. So can you talk us just briefly through each one of those and what they're...
Yeah, I'll tell you really briefly. Like I say, they were really organic. So I would never have expected some of these to stop. These all came from individuals. And one of the very first ones that we ran, that we began, was actually Cedar Ministry. Someone came to us with a real heart for nursing homes and wanting to kind of share God's love in nursing homes. We already had a monthly Sunday afternoon thing in one nursing home. It was impossible to get people to run it. It had to close. But when we asked people on a Sunday morning if they'd be willing to give up one Sunday a morning a month to go into local nursing homes to share the gospel, we had loads of people respond. And if I'm really honest with you, I was a bit disappointed. It's like, did our first one have to be that? You know, couldn't it be something a bit more dynamic and exciting? But it was incredible, actually, because some of the people who were the most nervous, some of our older people, a bit worried about the change, they really believed in this as a ministry. And we now go into 7 nursing homes. We have 50 people on the team. And we have seen Alpha Course run. We baptized, well, a lady, an 88-year-old lady was baptized in the home by the people that run the missional community, not by us ministers, in the home with sprinkling in her wheelchair. She's died now. It was in the local paper, wanted to be baptized. I've been in a dedication for the manager's baby who wanted to have her baby dedicated as part of Cedar Ministry. It's been a huge blessing. And it came from the verse in Psalm 94 that talked about being like the cedar that bears fruit right into old age. That's where that came from. That was Cedar Ministry. Sports Plus was a really early on alternative gathering for us. That's been running for about 7 years now. It's probably our largest and our most effective. It was a bunch of young families, a bit like you've got, that came and said, we really want to reach out in a fun and active way to young families. We hire a local sports centre and we offer all kinds of different activities, ranging from soft play and ride-on toys for the little ones through to table tennis and a climbing wall and trampolining and football for the older ones, Pilates, a run for adults, all sorts of things. And we stop halfway through for, we call it a halftime team talk, where the little ones have a biscuit and a Bible story and a craft. And the over eights and adults go to another room and have a 10-minute testimony, bit of input, bit of teaching and some discussion with their coffee and cake at halftime. So there's activities in the first half, then there's the halftime team talk, and then there's activities in the second half. And that's been unbelievably effective for us. Brilliant connections. People who want to do something with their kids as a whole family on a Sunday have really bought into that. Early Birdies, as you can imagine, is an early round of golf on a Sunday morning. So they do the back 9 holes of a local golf course really early. And somebody will kick off and say, we're normally at church, but this is church for us today. Here's a couple of questions to talk about on your way round. And off they go and play. And then have bacon butties in the clubhouse afterwards. And they can all chat. Common Threads is needlework and craft. Bring your own craft project. There are people there who are able to help. You could be a beginner or you can be experienced. And that's a group that's been for women to come and do their project and break in the middle for coffee and cake and a short thought or testimony slot. Sunday Lunch is a homeless lunch for the most vulnerable and in need. That's actually twice a month, but it's run by 2 different teams. So there's always a bit of a devotional and a Bible study time with the team, and then serving lunch for those who need it in the area. Mud, Sweat and Gears is for Keeney mountain bikers, and they go off for a cycle. They'll sit at the top of an amazing view and read a psalm and share a bit of the gospel with anyone who's there. Heart for Parklands is a local visiting project. So people who are shut in or isolated, not Christians from our church, that's a different pastoral thing, this is mission. So people who would like a monthly visit from a listening ear and a friendly face. And people go off and meet together to pray at church and then go off in twos around and about our area, visiting people who'd like a visit. Table Talk doesn't happen anymore, but that ran for quite a few years, which was in a local cafe, buying breakfast for your friend, having a menu of questions and a talk, a kind of apologetics type breakfast event, the Table Talk. And Walk and Talk is a local walk where you meet locally, go off on a walk together and stop halfway around for coffee and cake and a kind of Christian story. That's a bit of a whistle-stop tour. I hope you were able to take that in. But seeing the logos kind of helps bed it in your mind, doesn't it, the sorts of things we're doing. And like I say, all of these came from our people, and some of them have been going for 7 years and some of them have only been going for 1 or 2 years, depending on when they started.
Presumably each of those you view almost as a mini church, in that they have a life of their own, a spiritual and Christian life of their own, and they're not just there as a feeder into Sunday services at CBC. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. It's a bit slippery, and we often get people say to us, how do you get people to come to church from it? You know, how many people have come to your church because of your missional communities? And our answer generally is that's not the idea. Now, obviously, we'd love it if people come to Sunday church, and actually a surprising number of people have done, actually, when they've got friends and connections. But our aim is not to get people to come to Sunday services. Our aim is to share faith in a culturally appropriate way for people who haven't wanted to engage in another way, and in a way that suits them in a community. So that raises loads of questions about what it looks like when someone becomes a Christian, or how you disciple someone, or what you do with them. And we learn that as we go, and we sort of make it up as we go along when that happens. But that is our hope. So when Bessie said she wanted to be baptised at Cedar Ministry, we weren't going to wheel her into our building to baptise her. The lay leaders of that ministry, they're the ministers in that place. They did the baptising.
That's brilliant.
So, yeah.
Really good, thank you.
So have you had to, take some people on a journey? If there were some of those, mud, sweat and gears guys who wanted to explore a little bit more deeply, how would you handle that?
Yeah, so we try to have a kind of, multiple things on offer, and trying to mobilise the people in the communities to be the ones to do the discipling and the journeying. So sometimes people have come from these alternative gatherings to our central Alpha course. That's happened quite a lot, actually. So once people feel confident in sharing their faith and people have come along to an event, then that bit easier, isn't it, to invite people to Alpha. We've had quite a bit of, one-to-one discipling, reading the Bible together. We've also trialled Alpha-style things in homes that are just much more accessible. So, for example, I've run about 5 now Alphas at home with the last 2 have been with young mums, for example, that have come through our toddler group and have come through Sports Plus. So rather than coming to a central Alpha course at our church, we're running something in a home. And we've seen quite a few people become Christians in that way. But it's an ongoing question. And what I wouldn't want you to do is look at those and think, wow, that's amazing. Must have had hundreds of people becoming Christians, because we haven't either. And we are very conscious that this is seed sowing. We're trying to reach people who don't want to come to church. So we're not doing common threads with people who are just about to become Christians. We're doing common threads with people who like to knit. I've got a Christian friend. Don't mind sitting through a kind of Christian testimony. So it's long haul and it's seed sowing. But we think we make connections now with as many people outside the church as in. So if in the course of a month we might make connections on a Sunday morning with 400 to 500 people, we think through these communities we are making connections with 400 to 500 people. Now, loads of them are a million miles away from faith, but that's a lot warmer pond. There's a lot more low-hanging fruit there than we had before. And also, it's so good for the Christians. It's been so good for the Christians as well, which is another thing.
Do you, on a regular basis, say to the congregation, "Hey, don't forget, if you've got an idea, if there's a people group that you're interested in, or if you've got a hobby, or if there's a social issue that you want to deal with, and it has a missional," are you constantly reminding your congregation how if somebody in your congregation came up with an idea, what's that process? How does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's like anything you want to encourage in your church, you have to communicate it till you're in the face, don't you? And actually keeping things on the agenda, that's hard, isn't it? There's always these pressing, urgent things to make announcements about, isn't there? But our ongoing culture of missional community is easy to let slip. So hence making sure every single Sunday we say, while we're here gathered today, Sports Plus and Sunday lunch are meeting out. Let's pray for us and pray for them. But yes, we try to have regular sharing times at regular points through the year. So celebrate what you want to propagate, I sometimes say. If you want things to grow, you have to celebrate the things that are already growing. Yeah. So getting people to feedback, testimonies, examples, things that have happened. And in those times, then saying, if you've got ideas, come and chat with us. Or someone might come and say, I've had a really good idea. I really feel that it's right to run a walk and to share faith through a walk. We might put something in our news sheet or make an announcement to say, there's been this idea. We're just seeing if it's got legs, pardon the pun. if anyone else is interested, come and tell us. And then if I get 5, 6, 7 people come and say I'd be up for that, then I think, oh, there's some traction there. We'll gather a little group together. We'll start to pray and think about it. If no one comes, we leave it for now.
Right.
How do the participants or the outsiders get involved in this? You mentioned at one point they're people who have Christian friends. So that's the main way people get involved, through existing relationships.
Yeah, so it's largely invite. Hartford Parklands, our visiting group, we put in the local residents association news information. Mm-hmm. We put it out in our monthly church magazine that goes out to 1,000 homes. If you've got a neighbour that's lonely that would appreciate a visit, get in contact with the church. So we've had quite a few contacts that way. Walk and talk is advertised in a similar way. There was one lady who lived opposite the gathering place, and she'd see them meeting outside the local shops every month, and she'd seen it advertised in the local magazine. Didn't have any Christian friends, and then one day plucked up the courage to go over there and has become part of the walk and talk family. She was very depressed. Her husband had died. She says she found peace again. She found faith again. She's now thoroughly involved in the life of the church and helps out with another one of the alternative gatherings. But mostly it is as often as faith is, isn't it? Mostly 80%, 90%, it's connection, it's invitation. Mm. So part of what's positive is providing something for people to invite people to. Mm. You know, for us as churches, it's like people think if they do Alpha, then they've got an invitation opportunity. I think you have to have quite a deep relationship with someone to be able to invite them to an Alpha course. I think that's a very certain kind of friendship, and a lot of our church folks don't have those kind of friendships. Mm. But they do have the sort of friendship at the school gate, or, you know, in the queue for the post office, or with their neighbour to say, do you fancy coming along with your knitting with me? Or do you fancy a bike ride? And with all our publicity, we're really upfront about the kind of Christian faith aspect. We don't want people to be duped into coming, you know, come for a bike ride. Well, then tell you about the gospel, you know, it's all there in our publicity as well.
Very good. We, as part of our vision, discussing the vision, sharing the vision, we tried to describe what a month of Sundays might look like. And we came up with one Sunday we might all meet together, and the next Sunday we might meet in house groups for Bible study and prayer and stuff, and then one Sunday we would encourage these small missional communities. You said that actually at CBC you might have a different, you can say actually you can do it any Sunday you like, and you've carried on the services, and I'm sure that's because you've got the numbers to do it. We're a small church. What would you have any reflection for us on that kind of structure? What might be more helpful? Have you got any thoughts on that?
The great thing about this is you can do what suits your community. I think being a smaller church, you've got so much flexibility. And what you've just described, one Sunday out in missional communities, one Sunday in home groups, a couple of Sundays, you're describing up in and out over the course of a month, aren't you? You know, for our church, up in and out over the course of the month looks like this. For us at CBC, part of our reason for looking at missional communities was space. We were full to bursting. And while I would love to have one Sunday when we were all together and no one was out in a missional community, we just didn't have the space for that. And so we decided, rather than go to two Sunday morning services, we would just try and get people out of the building every week. Hence, we have a couple of missional communities out every Sunday to give us some space. If I was your church, I'd be thinking along the lines that you are. You know, how can we use our Sundays effectively in different ways? We also have people that we have to take with us as well. So, you know, for some people, this was absolutely huge. And our church wouldn't have been ready for us to say, on the fourth Sunday of the month, we are not having a Sunday service and we're going to be out. Partly because there'd be a bunch of people who wouldn't want to be out or couldn't be out, and so therefore wouldn't have anything to do. And I think that they would just find that very difficult, and the potential for negativity was high. Whereas this way, we call it the corridor of grace. If you don't want to be part of this, you don't have to. It's part of our DNA. Most of our church are in one, some aren't. And if you don't, then actually that's fine, because we've got a service every week anyway. So for us, it was the right model, but probably because of logistics and size. And if I was in your situation, Andrew, I'd be thinking creatively very much like you are, I think. Really would.
That's really encouraging. Well, look, other people, I mean, that's been so helpful, Ellen. You've done
a lot
really
of information.
Well.
I hope that was, gave you a flavour.
No. Fantastic. I'm sure folks here have got some questions they might like to come in and ask.
Right. Well, this question is two, really, I'd like to ask, really based on what you've said, Ellen, already. So historically, we've all come through a long period of time when we've moved from 30, 40 years ago, where you had the pastor, the vicar, the priest leading the whole thing effectively. And people looking to believe. Then we had the explosion in the 70s, 80s, and 90s of the charismatic movement, and it was much more diverse and things changed. And now we're moving very fast into something very different. You've mentioned two words early on in what you said. You said in terms of, you said high accountability, and I think you said low control, and then you said a steering team. In relation to the missional groups, can you explain that a little bit more in terms of, you know, leadership effectively, how something is led? Because we've moved, as I say, very distant from the past. Now we're in a very different time frame. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think so. It's not a free-for-all. When I say high accountability, low control, we don't just let people get on with it at all. But there's oversight, and it's light touch. So I think it does help that there's someone, in this case it's me, who kind of oversees everything, because it means I can have a kind of handle on everybody and an availability for people. When a missional committee starts, you know, we trust the leaders. So we are happy for something to get going if we trust the leaders. And so we are really happy for leaders to kind of work with me and then go on their own to shape what their missional community will look like. So by high accountability, low control, what we're meaning by that is we are not telling people what to do and how to do it. We are journeying in an organic way and praying alongside as people work out what mission looks like in that community. But there's lots of accountability, lots of feedback, lots of discussion, lots of prayer, lots of communication. And like I say, we're only happy for a group to get going if there is a steering team. So ideally three people. Now, some of the communities are really small. You know, Sports Plus is big, but some of them are really small, like Mud, Sweat and Gears. I mean, you have to be, who wants to go out on a mountain bike at 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning? Not me. That's that proper cycling, though. I visit all of the different gatherings. That one, I just meet them in the cafe afterwards. I just got old enough to keep up. You know, that one, they sometimes only have six or seven people. And sometimes I'll say, you know, is this okay? Is this mission? But I'm kind of, you know, there's seven of you, two or three of them aren't Christians. That's two or three more than would be out on a Sunday morning if you're meeting in church, listening to my sermons. So you know, that's more than okay with me. But a steering team of three, ideally. So a steering team of three, lots of relationship with me, lots of accountability, but lots of freedom.
That's very helpful. So that kind of leads on to the second question I had, really, that my background is, in all my working life, I've been in business, one form or another, over 44 years, 43 years. So what I've noticed now, when I'm talking to people now who are in business and investment stuff, they're saying that there's a fast-moving place towards, can I say, cumulative leadership, not accumulative leadership where you're trying to get a whole load of stuff feeding into an end result, necessarily, but cumulative. Would you describe the missional groups as in some way doing that, or would you say there's, you know, there's a high agenda and everything's being geared back into this agenda? Because I think you said earlier on that the groups are very fluid, flexible, they're very light, there's a light touch over them, they don't necessarily going to lead people back into the church. So I mean, I'm interested to know, see how you would discern this kind of cumulative leadership aspect. Does that
I think my reflection would be that we have without necessarily realizing it or having that as an aim, we have just mobilized a whole bunch more leaders than we ever would have.
Fantastic.
So you know, how much responsibility can you actually give people to serve actually in a kind of gathered church kind of way? The purpose of the missional communities is mission. That's the primary purpose. But there have been a whole load of positive spin-offs. And one of the real positives has just been the people's engagement. So there's an irony, really, that people in the early days were really worried about, what do you mean we're not coming to church? What about the teaching? You know, what about the fellowship? But actually, being in a community together, seeking God about mission, well, I tell you what, that makes you pray more than anything else. You know, that makes you work together. That galvanizes you together. And we've now got loads more leaders than we ever would have because we've got all those different missional communities all being led. So we can only have a certain number of people doing our preaching and teaching, for example. You know, there's two of us ministers. We've got another preacher on our staff team. We've got two student ministers. There's not enough Sunday teaching to go round, let alone other people in the church who like to go. But at Cedar Ministry in five different nursing homes, they do a 10-minute teach point every time they meet. So there's loads of people doing little talks, you know, right across. So that's just one example, you know, a kind of teaching gift, organisation and admin, hospitality and leading a little group. So mobilising leadership has been a really positive spin for us that perhaps weren't particularly looking for, but it's been excellent. And just people's kind of engagement with mission, whether people have come to faith in that group yet or not. Actually, people are committed to mission and praying for mission together. It's been, you know, on a leadership level. If that's what you're asking, Steve, yes. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
You're doing really well to keep up with my vague questions. Well, I think it all revolves around this aspect that church does, broadly speaking, it just doesn't work with the old models. It's not that it was bad, but it's just kind of redundant. So it's how will God unfold the future that will make the absolute max of the skills and abilities you put in each one of us. And that's it just seems that things are broken down so dramatically, and we are now all called upon as the priesthood of believers. And it's interesting, we did a Bible study, I think it was yesterday, with Andy leading it, on Ananias, was it Andy?
Yeah.
And he was like the first guy, totally out of the blue, to be a priesthood of believer, and God gave him a fantastic thing to do. Mm. And yet it was completely out of the blue. So it was unled in a sense. It was like the Lord was leading it.
Yeah.
If we continue to do what we currently do in the way that we currently do it as churches, the old model, the churches will die. They just will, won't they? It's having an honest conversation that the model of one minister come to us, attractional church. Our culture is not there anymore, and we have to move, don't we? Same message, different method.
Yeah,
a long time ago, and the first church I was involved in. There was a lady, and she was a funny old stick. She really was a funny old stick, and we didn't know what to do with her. So someone had a very wise wisdom and gave her a little job to do. And I tell you what, she's still doing that, and it's a leadership role. And she came out of herself when somebody gave her some responsibility. She came out of herself, and her life, her walk with Jesus, just sort of increased so wonderfully. And I think our model of church generally, sometimes without wanting, because we're always wanting people to come forward, but it does keep people sort of in their place, really. And this is just releasing. It's about releasing people. It's about decentralization, not centralization. I think that's wonderful. Denise has got a question.
Hey, you need my microphone, darling. There.
I was just wondering, so most of these, your missional communities, they meet once a month, do they?
Yes.
So do you find that's enough? Because it must take quite a long time to build momentum, especially if perhaps that's not the same group every month, because maybe someone can't make it, and then it's maybe you don't see that person for 2 months, you know. Yeah. So how does that work? And also my second question was, I can imagine it could be dangerous to start meeting and enjoying doing these things together and having a really good slot and conversation, but that slot and conversation about Jesus getting smaller and the activity getting bigger, because we're humans and, you know, we can easily get waylaid and distracted. And I can imagine, for example, the crafty group with the women just chat about everything other than what they're perhaps meant to be talking about. So it's things like that. So it's just the monthly meeting, and how do you keep that up, and how do you stay on track?
Yeah, we had similar dilemmas at the beginning because it just doesn't sound like enough. We're trying to build a sense of community, you know, once a month. What can you do? Only when it's only once a month. Partly the fact that it's long haul. This is month on month. And also, don't you find that the months come around pretty quick, actually? So when you're planning, you think once a month's not very much. And then when you come to do it, you think, what do you mean we meet next week again already? We're not ready, you know. So I've been quite surprised at the sense of community. It would probably be more ideal, wouldn't it, to be fortnightly? Probably. But it's not realistic for us. Actually, we've been surprised at the sense of community. I think also there's other stuff in and around it. So our young family, Sports Plus, it is once a month. But actually, loads of those people we also see at Acorns, our toddler group. Or I might see them at the school gate because my kids go to the same school or whatever. So in the course of a month, there's one kind of focus, but there's often lots of other bits of overlap as well. And the team will sometimes put on extra things. There might be the occasional, we're all going to the park for a picnic on this particular occasion, if you want to come, supplementary things as well sometimes. So it would be better to be more often. We're finding that monthly actually works surprisingly well for us, better than perhaps we thought it might. Your question about the squeezing out of the mission is really important, and that's partly my role, and the steering team's role is to keep mission right on the agenda so that it doesn't just become a craft group or a walking group. It's easier for the ones that aren't hobby based, so Cedar Ministry in nursing homes, or Heart for Parkland's visiting. There's a kind of, it's more obvious and more overt, the mission. The hobby-based ones take a bit of work. We just try to revisit the mission statement a lot, you know. So every year I'll try to meet with the different missional communities just to kind of, you know, regroup. And we just look at our mission statement. Are we achieving this? You know, really important for the team to be praying together and keeping mission on the agenda. And it also means that when I'm choosing leaders, I've got in my mind, it's less about how passionate they are about the thing. It's more about how passionate they are about sharing Jesus through that thing. So the guy who runs Early Birdies, he is absolutely bonkers about golf, honestly. Loves golf to death. But he loves Jesus. He loves Jesus. When he came to me at the end of a service and said, are you telling me that I can combine my love of golf and my love of Jesus on a Sunday? And so Early Birdies got going. And because it's him who loves golf, but he loves Jesus more, mission's on the agenda. It's not a big fanfare, but it's there every time. And it's in people's minds as they share. So keeping that missional intention is just really, really important. Yeah, really important.
I wonder if to have an event every month, twice a month or a higher level, that actually it might become about the event rather than about the relationship.
And actually people prioritize it because it's once a month as well. Sports Plus for our young families, they love it. So, you know, it's kind of special because it's only once a month as well.
Sean, and then Josie.
Just a quick one. Because these different groups meet on this just once a month basis, do you get many instances of people, unchurched people, being members of several clubs over the course of the month and using it purely as a social activity rather than having any interest whatsoever? And I mean, we can't object to that, I suppose, in a way, but I mean, any exposure to the Lord, to the gospel is good exposure. But do you get many instances of that happening? We've only got a very small community. There's not a lot on offer for the community. And I can see perhaps some people being members of lots and lots of the different clubs purely for the social aspect.
We had to have quite a serious conversation with our church because we had this like pendulum swing. It was a big deal to persuade people theologically, practically, and in every way to be out of the building on a Sunday when they're so kind of churchified and used to coming on a Sunday. All of a sudden, we're encouraging people out. That took a big push. And then they're out and they don't really like it. So we had to have a conversation with our church about, it's not really the idea that Christians are involved in more than one of these. So you can't, you know, go to Common Thread one Sunday, walk and talk the next Sunday, and go on a mountain bike on the third Sunday. That's not really the idea. So for Christians, we've asked people to commit to one. It's a bit different if they come to the evening service, because we have an evening service as well. And if you committed to the evening service, we might let you go to two. But, and also Sports Plus, our thing for families, was so popular with our Christian families. We've had to say to them, we only really want you to come to this if we're inviting guests. Because all of a sudden, we couldn't run the thing properly because all of our children and young people were going to Sports Plus when it's supposed to be a mission thing, you know. As far as unchurched people are concerned, hey, if they want to go, if they're not coming to church, if they're sitting watching telly on a Sunday morning and then they want to come to three different alternative gatherings, that's completely fine by me. I don't think we're really seeing it because people tend to invite a friend. So people tend to come along to something that's a friend. I can think of one or two who might do Sports Plus and they might also bring their kids on Walk and Talk maybe. But generally, that hasn't been a problem. And if it was, I don't think it is a problem. It has been a bit of a problem for the Christians, but we've sorted that out now.
I've been doing...
It does sound like a very good way of actually avoiding hearing the minister preach.
Totally. Or choosing which ones to go to, depending on who it is preaching, Sean. Yeah. You know?
He doesn't need any encouragement, Ellen. I wouldn't have expected anything else from him. It's all right.
I can't play golf at all, but if it's Andrew preaching, then I'm there on the golf course.
He'll be on
like
the
that.
Golf course. He'll be on the golf course. Now, do you see what I have to put up with? I've been doing some webinars with Fresh Expressions and with Simon Goddard, who runs...
he's a goodie, isn't he, Simon Goddard?
Yeah, and Michael Moyner the last couple of weeks. Brilliant. And on one of the... and there you can watch the videos. I've sent the links to the guys here. But on one of the webinars, you know, this question was asked. What about Christians who want to come and attach themselves to these that aren't part of the core team? And they said, do not allow it. They've seen so many times when Christians have tried to get involved in these outreach events that are being run for a particular group, and they kill it because they want it to be for them. And I think that's a really important thing for us, is that they need the support, but actually this is a missional thing. It's not primarily for Christians, it's for this group to reach out to that group. Josie.
Hi. I was just gonna say before you were talking about leaders, and I think it was specifically when you were talking about the guy about the early birdies, and he said he really wanted to do it, that made me think of it, and then now linking to what Andrew just said. But have you found that there's an optimum, because you said there's also a steering team, which I presume is a group of people who don't actually sit in the missional community, but is there an optimum number of people who would be part of the group? Because we're just saying we don't want too many Christians, but then we need enough that it's not always the same person doing it every week, perhaps.
Yeah, really good question. When I say steering team, I'm talking about each missional community having a steering team. So I'm talking about three people who are running that community, who are in that community.
Oh, I see. But
yeah, that's what I mean. But that's what we mean by steering team. And I do also agree with you that actually sometimes you do need wind the crowd. So... it is true, you don't want to be swamped with Christians, you don't, but you do. There's something about a kind of viable number that gives something life, isn't there? So for example, Walk and Talk actually largely is Christians, and we're just having an eye about whether we need to pause it, because it's mostly Christians. They get about 20 people along, maybe three or four aren't Christians, but there's something about the kind of, for the benefit of the three, having the vibrancy of walking with a group of 20 that I think is okay, as well as there being subsidiary benefits to that event outside of the mission in terms of getting to know each other and relationships and so on. Optimum number, we generally say we don't want to start any of our missional communities with less than 10 for that reason. Now, I mean, how long is a piece of string? You do what's right, but that's the kind of feeling for us, that we needed to have 10. Mud, Sweat and Gears is regularly now less than 10. It's been going a few years, but it still seems to operate okay. But in order to get something started.
You mean starting it with 10 Christians or starting it with 10 people who want to join the group?
Either. Yeah. And normally, of course, there aren't any non-Christians at first anyway, because you're just starting. So Common Thread started with a steering team of three women who were really into kind of craft and wanted to get it going. But they put feelers out for another little group within the church because they wanted to rent a crowd. So they started with 10 or 12 Christians meeting in a local school hall that they then could invite people into. So they now get about 25. So it's probably half Christians and half not, maybe. But of course, we're a certain size as well to enable that to happen. I appreciate. But I think if you start too small, it's difficult to invite people into it, isn't it? Yeah. And they're supposed to be a mid-sized community. It's not a house group and it's not a church congregation. It's something in the middle, isn't it?
And then would different people from either that steering team or that sort of rent a crowd, I quite like that little phrase, be the person who runs it every week, or would it be the steering team all together that do it? How did that usually pan out?
So each of the mission communities has a steering team of three, and those three run each of the communities, and they are all, almost without exception, lay-led. So all of them, I don't run any of them. Our children's worker is involved on the steering team of Sports Plus, but other than that, they are all, led just by people in the church. So each of them will have three people who are church members, and they make it happen. So I don't run any of the events. I help them get going. I help them get started. We organise all the finance and all the admin centrally. We provide all the resourcing. I get them going. But those three, with their little group of 10 or however many, they run the event. They run the event, which is largely very lightweight. If you think about most things I've described, they're not difficult to run. They don't take loads of work. They're not onerous for people.
Just a
Sports Plus sounds a bit of an intense one to run, though.
Yeah, that's been the biggest.
Yeah.
I think after about 4 or 5 months of doing it, they knew what they were doing. And it's most of them are incredibly cheap as well. We do hire a sports centre for that. And with that comes a couple of members of staff. So the staff set up all the soft play and the bouncy castle in one area, the trampolining and the table tennis in another area and so on. It was working out, because it was quite a large number of people with the team, how to operate and in what way. And it's evolved over time. It was a bit of a mission at first. But now it's amazing what they do. People think it's amazing when they come and see it, but it runs quite smoothly now. But you're right, it's been harder work. Yeah, okay. Because of the nature of it.
Can I just make a comment on the steering team, the steering group, whatever you call them? Again, on these Fresh Expression webinars, a lot of people, a lot of practitioners, a lot of Fresh Expression practitioners, people who'd started new kinds of outreach, they said one of the most effective things that they did was invite participants to become involved in the steering group. And the steering group, that group of three or whatever, they met together and were disciplined. And as part of their meeting, they would do some planning, but they would also have a short Bible study and a time of prayer. And as people engaged in the activity, some of them were invited into that organizing group. And they were obviously then part of, and you still had the short Bible study, thought and prayer and that sort of thing. And they said that was incredibly effective and fruitful. And also there's greater sense of ownership by the participants if they've had a say in how the activity is going to develop. And I think that's something for us to bear in mind. I don't know if you practice that in your alternative gatherings or not, or whether you have experience of that.
I love that as a principle. I guess in a slightly lower level, maybe Common Threads, the women in that, it's their group, the kind of unchurched friends that come. So very early on they said, we'll be on the Kate Rota, or we're happy to email around the list next time, so they're not on the steering team, but they're very much the ownership of that. And when it was moving venue, everybody was consulted about the venue. It wasn't just a kind of steering team decision. At Sports Plus, there's a dad was coming along. He was a football coach, and he was just really up for getting involved. So he's joined the team. He wears a team T-shirt that says, the mission statement on it, kind of thing. He's not a Christian, but he's brilliant at what he does and loves the kids, and is part of the team in that way. So yeah, absolutely, yes.
Great. Any other questions?
Yeah, just a question around, I guess, probably related to walk and talk and maybe the mud, sweat and gears, was you said, so your walk and talk is predominantly filled with Christian people. Do you mean people who are now attending Sunday services 3 times a month, and then they're also there attending the walk and talk, and there aren't many other people outside of the church attending Christian community? Or are there people that have become Christian and grown in their faith through walk and talk, but they only go to walk and talk, they don't then come to Sunday services? Is the one bit. And then the other bit is around, say, the mud, sweat and gears, where it's a relatively small group, maybe 3 to 4 people who are not, you know, Christian or are attending Sunday services, and they'll continue to potentially do that for a long period of time. And that's their exposure, that's the mission with them. If they were then to progress, they would then retain potentially never going to Sunday service, and Mud, Sweat and Gears would be their church community, similar to, say, the walk and talk. So how do you, I guess my question is around you talking about maybe winding up walk and talk. Why would you wind it up if it was a church community?
Yeah, questions. When walk and talk started, it had lots of energy and impetus, and quite a lot of non-Christians were invited and came along. And just over the years, it's kind of waxed and waned a little bit. And just in recent times, it's been largely made up from mature Christians who were part of CBC before, who like to go. So like I say, they might have 15 or 20 on a walk, and quite a large percentage of those would be Christians. And the steering team, you know, regularly say, is this okay that only 2 or 3 or 4 last time that came were guests? Are we okay with that? Do we need to, you know, rethink? You know, as I said to you, there are 4 people who wouldn't be doing it, wouldn't be anywhere if it wasn't for that, as well as it being a positive community thing for those Christians. You know, I think that's, they'd obviously really appreciate that, and they share faith and talk together as they go around. There's probably a small handful of people across the gathering who are in the category you described, but they come along regularly, maybe have got some kind of faith and haven't, you know, what next? And that is the question. Like mud, sweat and gears, someone invites their mate, they come every month, you know, they investigate faith, they're interested, you know, their friend leads them in a prayer, they become a Christian. You know, what do you do with them? Mm. It's a great problem. I want more problems like that. I then have the answers. I then have the answers. Yeah, if that's happening, yeah. I'm thrilled to bits. So it's a bit messy and we don't really know, but you know, and there are lots and lots of people who are connected to these communities and have been, for some of them, for years and still aren't quite Christians yet, you know, or still sowing the seed sown and on the journey.
And so one other, if I could, is around, so you've showed a bunch, you know, 7 or 8 different groups there. And if people expressed an interest in wanting to do it, and there was going to be a steering committee that could run it and you could give it a go, and there seemed to be a large enough community from within the church that it seemed a viable option to do. What are the examples of ones that maybe didn't work out, and how long would you give them before they didn't work out, and why?
500 questions.
Yeah, but...
that was your question as well, what did you say?
No,
it's all right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I said he was asking 500 questions. He's no problem. That.
No problem. We've got to be really okay with people trying stuff and failing. We were hopeless as that, as churches and church leaders. We talk a good game. It's, you know, let's just try, and it doesn't matter if some things go wrong, but we're hopeless about it in practice. We don't like it if things fail. And also, we are so good at starting things, and we are terrible at stopping things. So our church will start things and start things and start things. We are atrocious at stopping things. And it's trying to engender a culture of it's okay to try things. Now, having said that, we haven't actually had many of our alternative gatherings that have started and then stopped. I had a massive disappointment. We, you know, Sports Plus was being really successful, and really it was reaching kind of primary age kids and early teens. That was who it was reaching. Families with kind of between 5 and 13, let's say, or maybe older. But we started to have more and more little ones coming along. because of our connection with our toddler group and parents wanting something. And really, we had a bit of soft play, but really all the activities were really good at slightly older kids. And we spent a long time setting up a new missional community called Discover. We had leaders, and it was aimed at parents with preschoolers. And it was actually a lot of work and prayer and thinking to get that going. And it's a long story, but actually we trialled one. We did all the publicity. We had the mission statement. We talked to the church about it. It was a really big deal. We got loads of people involved. And just, you know, for various reasons, it just didn't get off the ground. And I was just really gutted about it. I thought it was a great idea. I thought it had loads of mileage in it. And I'd spent ages on it. And just personally, I just took that really badly until I just had to give myself a talking to, because we've been trying to say to the church all along, we'll try some things and some of them won't work out. And that's okay. We table talk. We was really enthusiastic at first. We met in a local pub. They did us a cooked breakfast. We'd sit around tables. We'd kind of give a little bit of an apologetic bit of input, and people would sit and chat. Brilliant at first, but it just dwindled. Mm-hmm. Didn't have the impetus or the energy. The leadership changed, and we just decided to call it a day. But wanted to honour it well, so we didn't just let it fade out. We told the church on a Sunday. We prayed for the people who were involved. You know, thank them for what they did. You know, you tried to give it a good ending. So there's been, you know, various examples of some things that have had lots of energy and haven't worked out. Some things that have dwindled. You know, some of the ones that are going at the moment, they're not amazing. You know, please don't hear me and think this is all fantastic. Some of it's just tootling along. And that, you know, so it's not all wonderful, but in the mix of it all, that's just all okay. We try some things, we fail. We start some things, we stop them. We let some things poof along because that's just how they are for now for that season. And then some things are really fruitful. Does that answer your 500 questions, Martin?
It does. Yeah, that's all of them. Thank you.
And how often do you have those meetings where you sort of regroup and sort of say, this is what's happening in my mission or community, and have that chat? Is that on a quarterly basis or something like that? Or
try and gather all of the leaders together at once, once a year, sometimes twice, maybe with a visiting speaker, or just to kind of, we call it cross-pollination. So all the gatherings are really different. Like if you're into knitting and they're in that group, how does that relate to a homeless lunch on a Sunday? They're so different. But it's all about mission, and we do quite a bit of kind of cross-pollination, idea sharing, a bit of inspiration and input. We try to do that once or twice a year. And then I obviously the teams meet individually themselves, and I try to get round those teams. I try to visit on a Sunday as many as I can in and about doing Sunday services as well. And then I try and visit the steering teams as well, once or twice a year as well, to try and give it a bit of input. But it varies. Sports Plus is so dynamic. I'm just involved more to give it shape and help them think about it. You know, Mud, Sweat and Gears is biking with a guy who loves God and will share a psalm. It doesn't need as much input in steering. So, you know, so that's roughly how it works, on the basis that I've got a kind of open door and I'll send lots of emails. It's been a nightmare in lockdown, though, because everything stopped, of course. So we're just, you know, wondering what God's saying and all of that. But that's a whole other thing, isn't it?
I was going to say, actually, because you were saying about walk and talk and maybe petering out. But I thought, isn't that now, wouldn't that be the thing? It might have to split into multiple groups. But
we might be having 50 walk and talks, and all of a sudden they'll have a massive energy about it because we can meet outside in small groups. And that's about it. Exactly that. Yeah, and I tell you what, Hartford Parkland's a visiting group. They can't visit, but they've been phoning, and we've had two people that would have died if it hadn't been for our phone calls, keeping in touch with them. I had to rush around to somebody and call an ambulance because they have no one. They're isolated, but people are kind of checking in on them. So there's been, you know, there's been connection still in lockdown. Not all of them, but some of the gatherings have still had connection. But yeah, walk and talk could have a renewed energy, couldn't it, Sue?
Yeah.
Steve, Sean's been waiting patiently. He's been waiting.
It's right. It's just something that's been on my mind not from the beginning, but when you said all these groups on any one given Sunday, at least one or two of the groups won't be there because they're doing their particular activities. So apart from, I would hope, Easter and Christmas, are there any other Sundays or any other days of the year where you will have a whole church family service, to want to call it something else, where everybody comes together, where the whole church family comes together? Or do these groups just continue in separate lives and entities?
if we had space, we would call people together more, but because we don't, we can't. We have a nightmare on a fifth Sunday because none of the groups are out. So trying to fit everybody in is really difficult. And on Easter Sunday, we do have two Sunday services just on Easter Sunday because there's just no way that we could fit everybody in the building. But yeah, that's, and that's one of the down points, Sean. You know, wouldn't it be amazing if we had a big enough space where once a month or however often we say, once a quarter, everybody was back and it was a massive celebration of all the missional communities and what God's doing in our community and all of that. I'd love that. Practically, it doesn't work for us, but I'd love it if that was the case.
Almost a case where you need to go to that sports hall or get a marquee or something and take it out, and so that is big enough, and create the space. And create
find
the,
a space. Yeah.
Thanks. Okay, thank you. Good question. Steve?
Well, Ellen, I just wonder how, you know, any group of any normally ends up with a leader, and usually a group continues because you've got an enthusiastic and as we would see, God, a gifted person who's enthused to do whatever group they're doing. So you've got to have, I guess, someone emerges as a leader effectively. So, you know, there's this conflict between cumulative leadership that's just organically evolving and a sort of a light touch pushing things maybe in a little sort of direction. So my question really revolves, how do you sort of discern who could lead a group, and when are you waiting for people to come to your leadership to say, I'm enthused about this, or do you go to people to open things up, or do you as a church, have you thought about different things that could be done? How does it kind of organically come about? Because you know, you've got maybe have some people doing a particular group and it's just a non-runner. It's never going to be a runner because they're just not, A, that enthused about it, and they haven't got the skills and abilities to actually run with it for long term.
Leadership is everything, isn't it? You know, if you've got good leaders, things work. And if you haven't, they don't. People can talk about models and formulas and kinds of leaders. But if you've got good, godly, enthusiastic leaders, things tend to work. So I don't proactively approach people, hardly ever. But we will say, who's got, in our regular updates, you know, if you're passionate about something, if you think you can build a sense of community around something for the lost, the little, or the least, come and have a conversation. And then those people might come. If someone says, I've had a really good idea that someone ought to run, I mean, how many times have we have church leaders heard people say that? Someone ought to, it tends to be a no-go. Usually people come and say, you know, I've got an idea and I'm up for giving this a go. And then we will then discern whether they and a couple of others have got the leadership that's needed to make the thing happen. So when we started Table Talk, our kind of cafe apologetics breakfast, there were some brilliant leaders, really enthusiastic, and it worked. They moved away, or stepped down actually, and some other people took it on, and they weren't good enough leaders. It wasn't really their thing, and really that's why it folded. So yes, cumulative leadership, yes, getting other people involved, but you have to have good leaders in the first place, don't you, I think, to make things happen. You've done very well, everyone. It's quite hard to concentrate via Zoom, isn't it, on these sorts of things.
If I can just ask one question then. You've mentioned quite a few times the size of CBC, and obviously I think we're about six times smaller than you, kind of 50 people, 45 to 50 people. What would your advice be for a small church that's going down this route? And there is a sense of excitement in our church, and people have spoken about the adventure and the step of faith and so on. But there's also a, what are we going to do sort of thing? What's your advice?
If I was to move to another church, and let's say I came to a church of 50 to lead that church, I would be wanting to do something like this. It might not look the same. You know, this is not a formula. It's one story sparks another, as we said. The beauty of missional community is that it fits every size. So we are a bigger church with loads of people. It makes us a bit cumbersome, and there's a massive program. You know, it's a beast to maintain our church program. You know, it's hard work just to kind of keep the program running, and then trying to do mission. But it does mean we've got people resources, so therefore we can run nine. If I went to a church of 50, I would rejoice in the flexibility that would give you. And I would be saying that still doesn't mean just because we can fit more people in the building, it's the same problem. Most people in your area aren't going to come to your church, however brilliant your church might be. But a small church can still do one or two. So the beauty of it is it doesn't actually matter about the size, does it? It's about what does it look like to be good news in our community in a way that our people could get excited about making connections that's easy, whatever the, and that's true whatever the size.
Can I ask a question leading on from, following on from that? So we're transitioning into this church of small groups. Your groups developed over a period of time. Where your missional communities meet each Sunday, but each Sunday there's also a service at the church for those people that for some reason don't feel able to do something. We're going to have one Sunday where this is going to be missional communities, and I'm having one or two conversations with one or two people that are saying, you know, what are we going to do? What is that? You know, what would your advice be to us about that? Because I suppose in theory, if someone's not going to be part of a small missional community, then there's virtually nothing for them to do that Sunday. You know, have you got any thoughts around how we might do that? Do you think we've got the right model? Do you think there ought to be a period of transition? You know, have you got any thoughts about that?
If I was starting again, I would spend more time in building up the community before rushing into putting on the event. So, you know, people were really excited about running an event for young families that they could invite people to, that had activities and sports. But I would want to spend more time building up the Christian community, the missional community, that share life and faith together, eat together, pray together, pray for the area together before launching out into the event. And we went too quickly into that. And what that means is, in a kind of ironic way, our missional communities have become events, really, successful events, positive events, you know, well-respected events, events that people enjoy. But we've added to our church program that was already full to bursting another program of missional community events. And if I was starting again, I'd be putting people into missional communities that really were just Christians in communities that were seeking God together about mission together and having life together, praying together, eating together, and being a community on mission from which certain activities, monthly or whatever you decide, then flowed. Yeah. And then I wonder whether people would be part of that community, whatever. So they're not hearing, be part of this group and we're going to go out on the green and give out drinks to people playing football. They're hearing, in this area where we live, we're going to meet in a group of 8 or 10. We're not a home group because we're not just about up and in. We're praying out, we're thinking outwards, we're asking God what we can do. We're family on mission together, and then see what organically comes from that, if I was starting again. Yeah. And I wonder if, Andrew, in a church your size, if you are thinking about having a Sunday where you don't meet, you're not asking people to opt into an event or not come. You're inviting people to be part of a mission or family.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. We talk in the graft about not wanting to do events for, but rather do stuff, do life with the community. Sue, you're wanting to ask a question.
Yes, and it's a bit ironic seeing as I can't stand Zoom, but no offence, it's been lovely tonight, thank you.
No, I'm also very over Zoom mostly after 12 weeks of it, Sue, I hear you.
thank you. But somebody in our house group was talking, and there's been a fair amount of discussion about it, really, about how the Zoom thing is actually connecting with lots of people who anonymously like to come and dabble. And actually, you know, you were reading in Christianity magazine about how positive this has been, and you know, quite evangelistic for seeking people to come and stick their toe in the water type of thing. So I mean, could it possibly be that a Zoom thing is kind of like the holding space for those who are not going out in community? So it's somewhere that people could log on to and just be, if they didn't want to go and be missional. Anyway, just lob that.
Loads of possibilities, aren't there? You know, for prayer, kind of backup support in prayer, or I think out the other side of lockdown, we're going to be different, aren't we? We're going to do things differently because we're different. Oh. And there's going to be loads of stuff from this season that we're going to carry over. You know, we've had revival in our prayer meetings. We can get people to come to prayer meetings. All of a sudden, loads of people are coming to our prayer meetings. We're starting out for next week. I can't believe how many people have signed up. You know, we struggled to get people to out for the last time we ran it, you know. So there's definitely Zoom opportunities, isn't there?
I'm going to make Sue Captain Zoom instead of David.
Lucky you, Sue.
I would die.
Apparently we're recording, Sue, so they've heard you say it.
It's on record. Hillary.
It just sort of went through my mind that there may be a small group of people in our particular fellowship who wouldn't engage straight away with this idea of missional community, but maybe they could still meet, perhaps in the lounge, and they could be their own missional community, and they could indeed still be mission-focused,
Yeah. Even
if they didn't want to join one of the other groups. Maybe we should sort of think that way as well.
Yeah.
Be inclusive.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good. Just while other people are thinking, we'll I can't see the time. Is it nearly half past? So we'll finish in a moment. Just you mentioned a couple of times the lost, the last, the least, and the little. What's that about?
We have various values as a church, and that's one of ours. You know, so one of ours is that we are mission orientated. One of ours is that we're family minded. One is that we are about the lost, the last, the least, and the little. So the lost, those who just don't know. The last, who can't hear because of their position or place. You know, the least in society's mind. And the little, that we have to have a focus on children and youth, else our churches will die. And we unashamedly say that we prioritise those. So we judge what we do against that, and we use that language a lot so that people know that we are about the lost, the last, the least, and the little, and we're trying to serve those people well for the sake of the kingdom. It's not lowest common denominator. We are not trying to please everybody. We have a bias, an appropriate kingdom bias in our values. So I guess it came out of my mouth because I'm so used to saying it, you know, to our church family, that's who we prioritise.
Mm. Yeah, and it's focused. That's good. Great. Well, I think that's been hugely interesting and helpful and encouraging. And we're very, very grateful, Ellen, that you've taken the time to come and join us. I'm sure with Ken going, a certain extra load will be upon your shoulders at this time. So we shall pray for you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, a real pleasure. And they'll be praying for you. You know, how exciting. How exciting that you're part of a community that are having these conversations.
Yeah.
The kingdom of God needs churches to do things differently. So it's, you know, brilliant, really brilliant. So really glad to come and give it a bit of input. If there's anything I've said that's made it sound like we've got the answers, you know, this is just all it is our story and what we've learned along the way. And I'm, you know, excited for you about what you're planning.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed.